What we've been talking about over these last few months, we've been doing a series all about church. We called it Irresistible. Because the idea is that when Jesus said, I'm making a church, he said, I would make something that would be totally irresistible. The gates of hell, everything that's dark and evil and bad in the world, would not be able to resist it, that it would overcome everything that we find as a difficulty in life. And the first time that we did this, we had a series, we called it Moving. And in Moving, we just talked about the idea about church and how Jesus had set this up, that church is not something that you go to, it's something that you go with, because it's a movement, it's a gathering of people. So basically, church is a gathering around a common conviction to fulfill a common purpose. It's people getting together to do something together. And we talked about last time the kind of people that you need to make that kind of thing happen. And it's actually about disciples. See, the thing with a disciple is a disciple isn't someone that just believes in Jesus. They follow Jesus. So a disciple doesn't just believe, they follow. They follow what Jesus says. They follow the way that Jesus lives. And they give up everything in order to gain the thing that they really need. Jesus talks about the secret to being fulfilled. And he said that it was about being willing to give up everything. And so today we're kind of coming on to the whole issue of connecting. And connecting means that the kind of people that God puts together, that Jesus puts together in the church, these are disciples that get to connect with one another, to make community together with each other. And what I want to do, just before I get into that, is I want to ask you the question, where do you connect right now? Where do you connect with other people? Who is it that you most easily connect with? What are the people that you find it most easy to be yourself with, to be vulnerable with, to be open with? Is there a group of people that you know that you're a part of who really, really know the real you, know the true you? It might be your family. It might be a bunch of friends. It might be people that you work with. It might be your football team. It could be any group of people. But here's the question, and I want you to be really honest and think deeply about this. Are you part of a group of people where you know that you can be real, where you can be your truest self, where they will love you, where they will accept you, where no matter what you do, you're wanted and you're part of that group and you're never going to be let go? So if I was to put it another way, I would say this, where are you truly known and loved? Where are you truly known and loved? Where is it that you can be yourself, where you can be vulnerable, where you can be open, where you can be totally real and transparent with people? Where does that happen? Now, for some of you, you're going to be able to say, actually, that is a place where it's very easy. I know somewhere like that. I've got a place like that. But for many of us, actually, that's a difficult question to answer. You feel like, you know, I'm not sure if there's a really strong place. I mean, obviously, my family, maybe my mum, my dad, they have to love me. It's Father's Day, you know, the old man has to love me. But you ask the question, do I really belong somewhere when I'm really, really me? Or do I have to wear a mask the whole time? Do I have to try and be on my best behavior? If people knew who I really am, would they still accept me? Or would they reject me? It is quite an interesting question, because the way that I see it, it's harder and harder for us to connect in a disconnected world. And actually, there's some research being done on loneliness and how people feel connected with other people or not connected with other people. Last year, the Guardian, it published some research that was done by the Office of National Statistics. And it said that Britain is the loneliness capital of Europe. It is the place in Europe that has the highest level of reported loneliness. So in other words, in Europe, people feel a less strong connection with their neighbors. They feel that they've got less people to turn on, or sometimes no people to turn to in a crisis, and they have real issues. Now, loneliness, not just for people in Europe, but generally, not just for us in the UK, loneliness with older people, again, it has a surprising effect on people. The University of Chicago, they did a study, and they found out that with older people, the effects of loneliness are a greater damage to health twice as more as damaging as obesity. And that loneliness is almost as great a cause of death in older people as poverty. So it's like a really, really big deal. Now, put your hands up here if you're between the ages of 18 and 34. Yes. You get in, Matt. He's just in, still feeling young. Okay, that's maybe half or two-thirds of us right here. And you could think, well, young people, we don't have the same issue of loneliness as old people, right? You know, old people, you expect them to be old because they smell and they have cats and they should be lonely. And actually, if you're over 55 here, I'm really sorry, that was just a joke. Present company accepted. But actually, here's the thing. This is the twist. Researchers found from the Mental Health Foundation, they did a survey in 2010, and they actually surveyed 18 to 34-year-olds, and they found that 18 to 34-year-olds are more likely to feel lonely often and to worry about feeling alone and to feel depressed because of loneliness than the over 55s. Just see that on the screen. They're more likely to feel lonely often, to worry about feeling alone, and to feel depressed because of loneliness than the over 55s. I don't know about you, but that to me seems like a shocking statistic, right? You'd think that in our age, you know, we're super connected. We are the digital age. I'm not 18 to 34, but I can imagine what it's like. Because you've got Facebook, you've got your Instagram, you've got your Snapchat, you've got your Twitter, you've got your WhatsApp. You can be tweeting and twerking all day, all night, wherever you are. And we feel like we're totally connected. Look at me on Facebook. I've got 1,000 friends. And this is me posting everything about my life. I am totally connected. And yet, the reality is that people don't feel connected. And people that study these kinds of things, they say that social media, it's great in many ways, so many things that it's good for. But it's actually not that brilliant at making you feel connected at a deep level, to be really, really true to yourself, to be really you, to be raw, to be open, to be vulnerable. In fact, when you're doing social media, what it is that you tend to do like your ideal self. You know, this is me on Instagram. Check out my filter. I look great, yo. And you tweet all the best bits. You put on Facebooks the stuff that's really, really great. Look, it's a selfie of me with a potato. And, you know, everything that makes you look great, you put that on Facebook. And so you look at everyone's Facebook feeds and you think, wow, everyone's having a great time. But what it is, it can be even more isolating. And the reality is that we're working harder, we're under more stress, and our levels of community, they've kind of broken down. All the traditional things where we used to stay together and live together and work together and stay in the same place where you were brought up and with the friends that you went to school with, now we're dispersed, we're mobile, we're under all kinds of stresses and pressures. And so loneliness is a big deal. More people in the UK living alone than ever before. More people reporting feelings of loneliness. And loneliness, it's linked to increased stress, paranoia, depression, anxiety, addiction, all kinds of issues of mental health. And that is a reality for our generation, your generation, also my generation. It's a reality for all of us. So here's the great news, and here's the good news that I want you to focus in on today. And actually, as you listen to some of this stuff, you might think, I don't know whether you're a church person or not. Maybe you're one of these people, you've been brought by a friend, you've been dragged along. I don't know where you're at. I don't know where you're on your spiritual journey. But if you are not in church right now, and you're intrigued, and you're curious, and you're coming in, you're having a look, this one thing alone is enough reason to run into the nearest church that you can, because the church that Jesus builds is all about love. It's all about love. That is the perfect antidote to loneliness. It's hardwired in. It's baked into the whole description of what it means to be church. That Jesus came to make something that was founded on and working out love. Now, there's this one guy called John. He was a disciple of Jesus. When he was a disciple of Jesus, he was probably around about, well, he was a teenager. He was the youngest disciple. And he was the only disciple that was not martyred for their faith. And so he lived to be like an old man. And he became known as the Apostle of Love because he was all about love. And he wrote a book about his experiences with Jesus. He saw it firsthand. And it's a very personal account. It's called, well, we call it the Gospel of John. And it is amazing. But there's a really, really weird thing about the Gospel of John in that the first 12 chapters are all about Jesus' life from the very beginning right up to the cross, the crucifixion week. The first 12 chapters. And then the rest of the book, from chapter 13 to chapter 21, they're like the last few days of Jesus' life, starting on Thursday in John chapter 13. Now, here's the thing. In the first 12 chapters, there is the word love is mentioned 12 times. That's about once each chapter. In fact, it's exactly once each chapter. And then between chapter 13 to 21, it's mentioned 45 times. It's like Jesus is saying this stuff to his disciples. He brings them in close, and you get this incredibly up-close, magnified picture of Jesus with his disciples in the last hours. And it picks up in chapter 13, in the Thursday before Good Friday. So they have a meal together, and Jesus says, look, I just want to give you everything that you need. This is my last stuff. I'm giving a big download. And it's love, 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 love. So I want to read you just a few verses from John chapter 13. And it starts like this. It says this. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? Jesus replied, you do not realize now what I'm doing, but later you will understand. No, said Peter, you shall never wash my feet. Jesus answered, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. So it's an intriguing thing. We'll come back to that later. But what happens? They're in this upper room. They're having this kind of family Passover meal. It was traditionally done in families. But Jesus is saying, look, you, my disciples, you are my family. But one of them, you may have heard of Judas Iscariot. He betrays Jesus. And he'd arranged to meet and to hand Jesus over to the authorities. And so at this point, what happens is that Jesus outs the fact that one of them is a traitor. And at that point, Judas gets up, he leaves the table, and he goes out. And then when Judas is gone, Jesus carries on. But it's almost like he goes into a new sort of level with his disciples. And he gathers them close, and he begins to speak plainly about his death. And he says this, we pick it up in verse 33. My children, I will be with you only a little longer. You will look for me, and just as I told the Jews, so I tell you now. Where I am going, you cannot come. A new command I give you, love one another. Everyone say, love one another. Yeah, yeah. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. Do you see how the word love is just coming over and over? It's tripping over itself. Love, love, love. It says, by this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. Now, let me be honest with you. There's some real problems with what we've just read. And if you were paying attention, if you haven't zoned out already, then you will have noticed there's some massive problems here, right? I mean, a lot of what Jesus is saying in this passage, it just does not add up. It does not make sense. It's weird. It's odd. It doesn't really mesh with what we're used to. I'll tell you three things for starters. One, he says, a new command I give you. Like, suddenly Jesus has just invented this new thing. Hey, I've got a new command. Love one another. But that's not new. I mean, right at the beginning of the Bible, it's there. It's there in the Ten Commandments. Like, everybody knows this. That's not a new thing. Leviticus chapter 19, one of the very first books in the whole Bible, it says, love your neighbor as yourself. That sums up all the law. So, it's not new. Secondly, a new commandment I give you, love one another. You can't command love. You can't command a feeling. You can't say to someone, hey, you, love him. Or you go up, you're young, free, and single. You find this girl, she lights up your life. You go to her, hey, I command you, love me. It just does not work like that, right? You can't command love. You can't command a feeling. You can't command me to like you. It just doesn't work like that. But hey, this is, that's minor. This is the real twist. This is a real difficult one. And again, if you're here and you're not sure you're a church person, maybe you've got a bit of a funny feeling about Christians, this one, it's like, I know this. This is what drives me crazy about Christians. Because it's like, it's disappointing. It's like an anticlimax. Because Jesus says, this is my new command, love one another. Don't worry about the world. Don't worry about anyone else out there. Just love each other. And some people, that's what really gets your goat. Because you're like, the church, Christians, they're all about being a little clique, little holy huddle, being all about one another. You know, Mark Twain, he said that the church is like nice people standing in front of other nice people telling them to be nice people. You know, it's like this thing that drives people crazy, that Christians, they sit in their little rooms with a little bell on the top of their building, loving one another, being kind to one another. But if you're not one of them, oh, they're going to judge you, they're going to criticize you, they're going to campaign against you, they're going to be, you know, all kinds of things. And we get, why not? So why is Jesus saying to the disciples, love one another, just love each other? What is that all about? Well, I think I can answer it, but let me take the easy one first. The easy one, the first one, new. When Jesus is using the word new, he doesn't mean like brand new, like it's never been invented before. He's actually using a particular word in the Greek, and that Greek word is a Greek word called kainos. Now, kainos, it means new, but in the sense of it's fresh, or it's got a different feeling or a different kind of taste. It has a different kind of quality about it. So it could mean in a fresh way. So if I say, hey, mister, you stink. You need to wear a new shirt. I'm not saying you have to go out and buy a brand new shirt or a new type of shirt, you know, that's made of silver or something. I'm just saying your old shirt is smelly. You need something fresh. You need something that is going to be fit for purpose for right now. It may not be a new shirt. You're not buying it from scratch, but it's fresh. Or if, you know, when they do like with Coke and they say, hey, it's new Coke. It doesn't mean it's a brand new drink. It doesn't mean suddenly it's made of cocoa or it tastes of oranges. It just means it's got a slightly different quality, slightly different flavor. They're trying to get more money out of us. You know, they've reduced the sugar or they put a little bit of a hint of cherry in it. And so when Jesus says it's a new command, he's saying it's not new as in brand new. You've never heard of this. But he's saying, hey, look, I'm talking about a kind of love which is, it's got a different feel. There's a freshness about it. And it's actually, it feels different to the normal love that most people have, because we all have love in our lives. But you have to ask yourself the question, what kind of love? See, the Bible talks about different types of love, and it uses these different words. And I don't want to get too technical, but basically, the first kind of love that the Bible talks about, the first kind of main word, and Jesus used this word, it's like when two guys go to a party and they're wearing the same outfit. You know what I mean? Like, there's a joke, and don't hang me for making, you know, huge generalizations. But there's a joke that if two women turn up to a party or a wedding and they're wearing the same outfit, it's like nuclear holocaust meltdown, you know, life vendetta. These women will be enemies to the end of time, right? Maybe that's just, I don't know, I'm not a woman, I don't know. But it's a joke, I heard it. But two guys go to a party, they're wearing the same outfit. It's like, hey, you're wearing the same shirt as me. And the other guy goes like, yeah, I know, right? And they go, yeah, dude, awesome. There's high fives, there's instant BFFs, they're best buddies forever and ever. And then they compare notes, and one will say, hey, do you know, I like, you know, music and stuff. Me too! Oh, dude, high five. And I like going out and, you know, being out there and being with friends. Oh, me too! Oh, I love you, you're amazing, high five. And I like, you know, adventure and getting out there. Me too! Well, we have... Sorry, that sounded a little bit Scooby-Doo. We have a... The word for that, the Greek word, is philio. It means me too. It's basically the kind of love where I like you because you're like me. You know, we connect with one another because we got stuff in common. And I see some stuff in me and I recognize it in you. And that makes us connected. It's kind of brotherly love. There's another kind of love that happens when you work with someone or when you're in a family with them or you hang out in a particular group together. You're just associated with them. Now, for some of you here, your best friendships are your work friendships. And you might be tempted to think that your work friendships are going to be there for you forever and a day. They're just solid friendships, amazing friendships. But you'd be amazed. You leave that job or you get another job or you get sacked or whatever. And before you know it, 6 months has gone, those friendships have gone. Because basically, your diaries just happen to intersect and overlap. But that kind of love, that kind of camaraderie, that association, well, that, the Greek word is storge. And it means I connect with you. I connect with you because you connect with me. And it's a great kind of love. The third kind of word that Jesus uses and the Bible uses is eros. Don't go into it too much. It's basically when a mummy and a daddy love each other very much and they have a special hug and stork comes along. So that's romantic love. Eros. Basically, I fancy you. So those are the three kinds of love that is used in the Bible. And then Jesus comes up and he says, look, I'm going to give you fresh, different quality, new kind of love. Something which has a different feel. It has a different taste. It's something that you may not have experienced before. And the word that he used, the Greek word, is actually agape. Agape is other-oriented. It is self-sacrificial. It is choice-based love. In other words, it's not, I like you because you like me. It's not, I connect with you because you connect with me. And it's not, I fancy you because you're attractive to me. It's not I anything. It's just, I love you because. I love you for you. It's nothing to do with me. It's all about you. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to earn anything. It's unconditional. And it will cost me something. It's something where you have to work this kind of love out as an action. It has to be something that you do. A few years ago when my kids were little, I was walking them to school one morning. And one of my daughters, she turned to me and she said, Dad, I heard this story on the TV. I said, oh yeah, what was it? And she said, well, there was a girl, a bit like me, and she had a dad, a bit like me, and the girl was sick, and then it said that the dad gave the girl like a kidney transplant. What's that mean, Dad? And I said, okay, well, you have two kidneys, and you only need one to live. So if you've got two healthy kidneys, you can give one of your kidneys to someone. And if they've got two unhealthy kidneys, they can have your good kidney. And they've got a good kidney, you've got a good kidney, then you're fine. And that's how it works. And she then said, well, what happens if you take both your kidneys out? And I said, well, you die because you need both your kidneys. And then the question came. She said, Dad? I said, yeah. She said, if I needed you to, would you give me one of your kidneys? And I remember it like it was yesterday. I remember where I was. And I remember this kind of huge kind of jolt of pleasure and joy and revelation that I got. And I said to her, my sweet daughter, if you needed me to, I'd give you both my kidneys. Like that. No questions asked. No big deal. No problem. No huge moral quandary. It's like, I love you because. And that love will cause me to sacrifice. And that love is not based on you being somehow amazing, somehow great, somehow wonderful. It's just there. It's all about you. It's not about how you make me feel. It's not that we're connected. It's not that we're like each other. It's not that there's a special attraction. It's just all about. And it's the Father's kind of love. And agape, that's God's love because God's the Father. It's His day today, Father's Day. And Jesus says, look, this is what I want you to do. I want you to agape one another. I want you to love like that. Now, if you get this, you can understand why Jesus could command that. Because in agape, with that kind of love, this fresh love, you don't have to feel it. In fact, you don't feel anything at all. It's not some kind of bubbly thing that comes up. It's just a choice. It's choice-based. Self-sacrificial, not about me at all. I can do it, but it's worked out in action. It's not an emotion per se. It is a self-sacrificing action. And Jesus says, that's what I want you to do. And you can actually command that. You can command a choice. You can command something that people have to do. But it's like the hardest thing ever. Hardest thing ever. He says, this is what church is all about. It's about people who love, two kidney love one another. And I want you to do that for one another. And if you have any kind of grasp of what I'm saying, you'll think, oh my goodness, that is unbelievably difficult. That's just ridiculously hard. How does that happen? And this is the thing. I used to think when I read that passage, I used to think, well, maybe it's because Jesus comes and fills you and he gives you special Jesus power, special magical strength, and this kind of love suddenly bubbles up and you can do it. But that's not what it's all about. The key to this passage is five simple words. It's this: as I have loved you. So Jesus says to his disciples, I want you to love, but as I have loved you. He didn't say, as I fill you. He didn't say, as I empower you. He didn't say, as I give you magically some kind of internal thing that makes you want to just be a wonderful person. He just says, no, you do it. And you do it like I did it for you, like I showed you. And that's why suddenly that washing of the feet, it makes sense. Because what Jesus was doing is saying, look, this is what love looks like. This is what two-kidney kind of love looks like. This is what Father's Day love looks like. It looks like me serving you by washing your feet. If you don't understand the whole washing of feet metaphor, basically in the ancient world, they didn't wear shoes like us. They wore open sandals, Jesus sandals, you know, like the name. And what happens is that they walked through paths, and they shared these paths with animals. You know, there's no path for people and path for animals. It's all the same path. And you know what it's like with animals, you know. It happens. And so you're walking around, and it's just unavoidable. There's no way that you can avoid walking these roads and not getting messed up. You're going to step in stuff over and over again, and there'll be raw sewage. There'll be animal stuff. There'll be rotting food. And you're going to walk in this. Now, when they eat, oh, it gets worse. When they eat, they don't have like table and chairs like we do. They have these low tables where they would recline like on a cushion, and the table is like a little thing close to the ground, like in a Bedouin tent. And they just splay their feet out around them. So their feet are not tucked nicely under the table. The feet are in the next guy's face. And so what happens is, when you go into a house and you're going to eat, the servant, like the lowest menial person, comes along, washes your feet, gets all the crap off, all the muck off, all the dirt off, all the mess, all the stuff that you've picked up, all the rubbish stuff. And you don't mind them seeing you like this because, you know, they're just lowly. That's their job. You're better than them. And that's why Peter says, look, you can't wash my feet because, you know, that's what servants do. That's what rubbish people do. And Jesus says, look, this is exactly what love looks like. I want to demonstrate it for you. I want to act it out for you. I want to show you what it's like. And if I don't wash your feet, you can't be part of me. Because actually, you can't be part of the community that I'm building, unless you're willing to be vulnerable like that and have other people do it for you and do it to you. And so you're basically saying, look, the community that Jesus is putting together is all about people serving one another, washing each other's feet, about being real. So this is basically my big idea. So if you've tuned out, this is the time to engage. And this is the take home, really. This is the one point I really want you to get. That church is where we learn to truly love others and be loved ourselves. So it's where we truly love others. It's a place where you practice. Jesus is saying, the kind of love I'm talking about, it's active. It's something that you do. And in order to get that, you've got to learn how to do it. And so Jesus isn't just washing his feet and then the disciples magically get this kind of spirit and power and it makes them loving. It's just an example. And Jesus is saying, look, for me to make the kind of church that I want, where God is out of the box and it's all about people making a better world, we've got to learn how to love. You love one another, but it doesn't stop there. It's going to go out into the world. But the church is like a safe place. In fact, you could argue that only disciples can really love like this. Because the Bible says we love because he first loved us. In other words, we've experienced something of Jesus' love. And that means that I can be in one of those kind of small environments, like a family setting, like Dave was talking about. You can't do community on a large scale effectively. But really, if you're going to be in any way open and honest and vulnerable with people, it's going to be in that small kind of family setting where I say, look, this is where I am. I've walked through life and I've picked stuff up and I'm messed up and I'm dirty and I'm ashamed. And I let you see the worst in me. I let you see all the crap and the mess and the muck and the mud. I let you see all the stuff that's clung to me, the stuff that has just covered me, the stuff I couldn't avoid, the stuff that wasn't my fault, but the stuff that, you know, you can't walk through this world unscathed. You just can't. You can't get through life with your emotions intact and everything fresh. We get messed up by other people. We get messed up by this kind of rat race that we experience. We get messed up by our own bad choices. But it's not like, you know, some kind of support group. Like a support group is when everyone says, hey, look, these are my feet. Oh, they're awful, aren't they? And everyone else goes, yeah, you've got awful feet. Let me tell you about my awful feet. And you go around the circle and everyone compares how awful their feet are. Christian community is not like that. Christian community says, look, this is me. This is real. And this is where I'm at. And then someone else comes along and says, yeah, well, I still accept you. I still love you. You're still of incomparable value. And I'm going to love you clean. I'm going to act in such a way that it washes you. And so we're in a safe place. We're in a place where we can truly let people know us and truly let people love us. And you know, in the early church, that's what they did. The book of Acts, chapter 4. The writer Luke, he records this. He says, all the believers were one in heart and mind. No one claimed that any of their possessions was their own, but they shared everything they had. For from time to time, those who owned land or houses sold them, brought the money from the sales, and put it at the apostles' feet. And it was distributed to anyone who had need. That's an amazing thing. One of the second century Roman historians, Tertullian, he said that the church, he said, this is what the pagans, not their own press release, this is what the pagans say about the church. See how they love one another. They're even ready to die for one another. And that was the experience of the early church. And that's the experience that I've had, the best experience of church. To be in a place where you are known and you are loved and you're accepted. Where you can be totally yourself. You can let the mask down. You can be real. You can be vulnerable. And it's practical. You share everything. You have things in common. It's the most amazing thing. I remember going into a church when I was just in my 20s. And I'd been brought into this church because they wanted me to do some speaking. And I was going to have a little bit of a job and a role, a bit of profile. And I can remember saying to one of these other guys, I was getting a bit kind of nervous and keyed up. I said, well, what happens if I fail? You know, what happens if I'm not the guy that you think I am? What happens if I just come across great in an interview? Or great on first meeting? Or great in a weekend? What happens if you get to know me and you don't really like me and I've changed and I've moved to this city and I've come and I've given up? What happens if I fail? If I'm not good enough? If really I'm not like you, or we're not really connected like we thought we were connected? What happens then? He said, Philip, nothing happens, because it's love, it's family. It doesn't matter about your performance. It doesn't matter if you feel like you fall short. Now that is a revolution. That is a community that the world so desperately needs. And that is, it's a place where we learn love. If it's an action, then you can practice it. You can get good at it. You can develop it. No one expects you to be like this off the bat. But I've been in such great community. I've had literally in my life about 4 cars given to me, 2 houses given to me. I remember being in dire need one day, and a group of my friends came around. They brought an envelope with money in. Now, I'm not saying that you have to be in church for that to happen. I'm sure that loads of people do that kind of thing, but I see it more and more, and it's actually part of what we're supposed to be. It's part of what Jesus calls us to do. And me and my wife, we have done, you know, we've been part of this kind of thing. You know, we've paid off mortgages when there has been a month where the people couldn't pay. And we have brought people and welcomed people into our houses. And we are committed to being part of a community that does that over and over and over again, where you can be part of a group, a small group, a loved group, not in a big setting like this. This is where we get G'd up and inspired. It's the changing room where we get kind of keyed up to go back on the pitch. But it's in those midweek groups. It's in those little communities. It might be one-on-one mentoring. It might be in a community house. But that's where we say, look, let me be real. Let me be vulnerable. And we say, yeah, you can be real. You can be you. You can be whatever messed up you are, and you will not be rejected, and you will not be judged, and you will not be condemned. This is a safe place. I know that some of you, you've been in church situations and it maybe wasn't like that, and maybe it went a bit south. But Jesus said, this is what I want you to do. And this is how it works. So what I want to do is I want to just give you an opportunity for prayer. I guess I want to put some practical things out there. I want to give you a life question to go away with. And the life question is this. Are you in a place where you are free to be known and to love and to have others to love you? That's the life question. So if we get that on the screen. And that's a question that I want you to just think about this week. And one of the reasons that we've invited you to fill in the welcome card is that we want to send out on a regular basis practical stuff, real life stuff. And it will have a question each week. And this is on our website as well. Am I in a place where I'm actively practicing how to love others with the love of Jesus and how to be loved by them? And actually, if you fill in this form, because if you're not in a group like that, if you don't have a place like that, we want to provide something for you, and we will do our best to make that happen. So I want you to fill in that little form. Give as much of your information as you can. And then at the bottom where it says things that you're interested in, just tick, I'm interested in a small group, because that's what they are, these midweek groups. There are places where we actively practice loving one another. And if you're not really in that place yet, you feel like, oh, you know, I've still got some questions about faith, then just tick the box that says, I'm interested in finding out more about faith. And we've got some stuff coming down the line, some stuff in autumn. In fact, again, it's group-based stuff where you can discuss and you can tear things apart and you can really wrestle with the issues. But we want everyone to know that Jesus' intention for the church is to have people who are totally following Jesus, who are sold out for this, and then to put them together in these most beautiful, wonderful communities where we're loving one another, we're serving one another, we're not being thrown by each other's mess and pain and difficulty, but we're loving because we're loving anyway, we're loving despite, not about how we feel, not because I'm like you, hey, we're in the same thing, me too. No, because you're valuable in God's eyes. And the next time when we meet, July the 19th, we're going to finish it off, because Jesus basically says, I take people who will follow me, I bind them up in communities where they practice how to love in a safe environment, and then they take all of that love to push out into the world. Make a difference in the world. They change the world. Let's pray. Lord God, I thank you for your grace. And I want to pray, dear God, that you would help us just to find community more and more. That we would be able to have that Jesus kind of love, the two-kidney love. Lord, I want to pray for everyone that's been listening to this. And that things actually, I'm not in that kind of place. I don't have those group of friends. But I want to pray that you would meet with them and that you would help them and that you provide that for them and you put them at the center of that. In Jesus' name, amen.